You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:59 a.m. Next up is American Standoff with Jacqueline Keeler.
So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful if you got the sense to take care of your source of perfection. Mother Nature, she's the daughter of God and the source of all protection. Look right now and you will see she's only here by the skin of her teeth as it is. So take heart.
Hi, good morning. This is Jacqueline Keeler, and this is American Standoff. I'd like to welcome you to the show. I'm the host, and this is a fairly new KBOO show examining the current political divide in America today from an Indigenous perspective, given by myself, a Native journalist based here in Oregon. And the show actually premiered on January 6, 2022, a year after thousands of supporters of former President Trump gathered in D.C., and then stormed the Capitol, contesting President Biden's election. So, we're going to take the focus of the show is to take a look at how all these different groups, these insurrectionist groups, and we have them here locally, like the Proud Boys, and their supporters. What does it all mean, and what have we learned in the past year? And so, today we are actually going to be looking at three different. News topics. One is the American trucker convoy heading to D.C. As you may know, about 3 weeks ago, I covered the Canadian trucker convoy, which was basically occupying Ottawa and blocking the borders, border crossings. And then the second topic we're going to be looking at is Trump's support of Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And that sounds as insane as it, we will be playing a quote, an audio of him saying these things later on, just as a trigger warning. For those of you who do not like to hear his voice anymore, and are relieved not to have to hear it every single day. But, and also, the support of right-wing commentators, like Tucker Carlson, who actually questioned whether we should all be hating Putin or not. I know that sounds insane too, but that's actually happening. And also, sadly and tragically, the recent use of deadly violence by a right-wing terrorist against unarmed Black Lives Matter protest organizers that happened here in Portland over the weekend. And these three different really quite diverse, really terrible things that are going on. What do they all mean? The trucker convoy here in the United States, Trump supporting Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And then of course the violence that we are experiencing here in our own city against people who are advocating for nonviolence. So we're going to take a look at all of these different things, and of course the examination is really based on the research I've done as a journalist, as a native journalist covering stories like these, and the role, really the structural role of white supremacy in this country, and how this interacts with these issues, and also even interacts with our posture overseas and impacts people overseas as well. So let's begin actually with the American trucker convoy headed to D.C. As I mentioned 3 weeks ago, I covered the Canadian trucker convoy that was blocking border crossings and refusing to leave Ottawa. That has been cleared finally. I honestly do believe that, and this is a call-in show, so those of you who have opinions, please do call in and let us know what you think. But I do believe that if the protesters were non-white, primarily, that this whole thing would have been cleared up much sooner instead of going on for 3 weeks or so. So the American trucker convoy, which was just announced on the 20th, 4 days ago, is beginning from several different points across the country, just like the Canadian convoy did. And so let's listen to some of the reporting from Los Angeles and D.C. about it.
In Adelanto, a group of local truckers gathered for a rally before traveling to Washington, D.C. Organizers have dubbed it, quote, the People's Convoy, and they are planning to take part in truckers' protests at the nation's capital. Mirroring the sit-ins going on in Canada right now, the truckers say they're being robbed of their freedoms by vaccine and mask mandates.
In response to those planned protests, some 700 National Guard troops are now being deployed to the nation's capital.
Those truckers say they plan to shut down Washington ahead of President Biden's State of the Union address next week. KTLA's Trevor Shirley reports from Washington, D.C.
A group of protesting truckers organizing here on the East Coast could also be here in the D.C. metro area by the end of today. They also say they're protesting COVID-19 restrictions. The National Guard troops called up won't be armed or take part in law enforcement activities, according to the Pentagon. Their primary role will be traffic control, as some officials fear the truckers will try to make Washington the new Ottawa.
They're working very hard at taking our rights away.
Trucker and protest organizer Bob Bolas says he's unhappy with COVID-19 restrictions, vaccine mandates, and rising gas prices. Reports say the group of truckers also want President Biden to lift the national state of emergency, which was put into place under former President Donald Trump in March of 2020.
We're not out here to be a hostile group. We're not out here to fight with the police.
D.C. Metro police officers are on standby with leave and vacation restrictions in place. The U.S. Capitol Police have also requested help from the National Guard.
So we're closely monitoring, closely watching, and working with state and local authorities.
Reports say the truckers may also try to snarl traffic on the D.C. Beltway, which encircles Washington. The timing of the protests is expected to align with President Biden's State of the Union speech this coming Tuesday. The D.C. police chief says his agency is monitoring the situation and will respond accordingly. In the meantime, D.C.'s mayor so far hasn't told residents or visitors to plan on avoiding any parts of the city. Reporting in Washington.
So that's some reporting that was done actually in the L.A. area from a TV station there about the U.S. trucker convoy, which is departing from various points across the country, including the Los Angeles area, and closer in, as they were noting, from Pennsylvania and locations like that. And so, good morning. This is American Standoff. This is a live talk radio show, so please do call into the studio if you want to be part of this conversation. And the number here is 503-231-8187. And this is Jacqueline Keeler, your host. So I would just like to introduce myself in Navajo. I am a citizen of the Navajo Nation, and so I'd like to say yak'eh to all of you. And in the Navajo way, we introduce ourselves to our clan. So my clan is Kia'ani, Towering House, Kia'ani Nishlik, and then I am born for my father's people, who are the Yankton Dakota known as the Yankton Sioux tribe to Americans, but we call ourselves Yuhanktawantahota. And so this is how we also usually introduce our other two clans as well, all four grandparents, but those are my two primary ones. So I also would like to acknowledge that this show is being recorded and broadcast in what we now call Portland, Oregon, which are the ancestral lands of the Multnomah, Wasco, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Cowlitz bands of Chinook, Tualatin, Kayapuya, Mulala, and many other tribes. And it's still their homes as well. And so so once again, this show, the premise of the show really begins with the January 6th storming of the Capitol, the insurrection. And really, we're trying to process what we saw and what we are continuing to see in the year since and try to make sense of it. And so once again, today we are discussing three topics. The American Trucker Convoy heading to D.C., which you just heard some audio of a news station sort of covering this issue and what's going on there. The second thing we're covering today is Trump's support of Putin's invasion of Ukraine and right-wing commentators like Tucker Carlson's questioning why should we hate Putin? I know, it's completely ridiculous. And the recent deadly violence used by right-wing terrorists, by a local right-wing terrorist against unarmed Black Lives Matter protest organizers that occurred here in our city this weekend. And so I'd like to once again encourage you all to call in. The number here again is 503-231-8187, and I'm Jacqueline Keeler, your host. And so let's hear some more from those truckers heading to the nation's capital. So that was pretty short. I'm not sure if it's playing properly. We will then skip that and explain a little bit about why the truckers are, since we can't hear their own words, I will try to explain to you why truckers are doing this. And as I mentioned before, with the Canadian trucker convoy, these are partly concerning new vaccine mandates for truckers crossing the border. And on January 22nd, the U.S. also imposed a mandate for non-U.S. truckers crossing into the U.S. And so as I mentioned before, the truckers in Canada protesting were a very tiny portion of the total number of truckers. 85 to 90% of truckers in Canada are vaccinated, and there are around 120,000 truckers. And so the couple hundred or so truckers that participated are a very tiny portion. Here in the U.S., the estimates for vaccination rates for the truckers here was estimated between, I think, given a much lower estimate of 55%. Of truckers in the United States are vaccinated. So it's far lower here in the U.S. As it is generally, I think, across the population of the United States. So this is a really compelling issue. I mean, I think I would love to hear your thoughts on what you think about this being brought, and also to say that it was brought to the U.S. is kind of inaccurate because it was such a fringe issue in Canada that a lot of the funding for the Canadian trucker convoy, as I covered in the previous show, was actually from the United States. There was a $10 million GoFundMe, something like the seventh most largest GoFundMe in the history of that particular website. And it was shut down, of course, but it did provide a lot, showed the financial impact of the Americans who are anti-COVID vaccine restrictions is having in our neighboring countries. And so once again, this is pretty crazy. So it'll be interesting to see what will happen in the coming weeks, especially as they approach the nation's capital. Trump, of course, as you may remember, reached out to Canadian truckers and encouraged them to join his new social media app, which has since gone live on Apple's iStore. And now Trump is praising Putin for his actions in Ukraine. So let's listen to the clips of Trump praising Putin.
Expert, but even I can see that virtually no one in the world thinks what Russia is doing right now is a good idea. Apparently, not even Putin's own advisors, who looked frozen and terrified during a bizarre national security meeting broadcast on Russian television earlier this week, where Putin quizzed them one by one on what he should do as if he didn't already know the answers.
The National Security Council of Russia had a televised event. They broadcast this highly choreographed session of the Security Council in Russia in which they were discussing the possibility, Vladimir Putin and his top officials, of recognizing those rebel republics in the east of Ukraine as independent states.
The entire world is aghast and horrified. The only people who could possibly think this is a good move are those unemployed fringe weirdos who go on small-time radio shows, you know, like this guy.
I went in yesterday and there was a television screen and I said, this is genius. Putin declares a big portion of the Ukraine, Putin declares it as independent. Oh, that's wonderful. So Putin is now saying it's independent, a large section of Ukraine. I said, how smart is that? No, but think of it. Here's a guy who's very savvy. I know him very well, very, very well. But here's a guy that says, you know, I'm going to declare a big portion of Ukraine independent. He used the word independent. And we're going to go out and we're going to go in and we're going to help keep peace. You got to say that's pretty savvy.
No, you don't got to say that. I mean, well, maybe you got to say that so someone will pick you up at the Moscow airport when you flee our jurisdiction. It's just insane.
This is a flagrant violation of international law and demands a firm response from the international community. Let me be clear. These are totally defensive moves on our part. We have no intention of fighting Russia.
So anyway, those were that's actually, if you could recognize the voice, that was Seth Meyers poking fun at Trump's support of Putin's idea to basically recognize eastern breakaway states of Ukraine. And we all have been pretty aware that Trump has quite admiration for basically dictators, and I think that when we talk about, you know, how that plays into white supremacy and the sort of DNA of this country, I think it's really important to remember that we have to wonder, like, what is the dialogue of democracy really about? And particularly in the context of who can vote, right? I think, last week's episode, we looked at, the decision by the Supreme Court not to stop Alabama from using voting redistricting maps that would actually suppress black voters. And this was found to be in violation by a lower court of the Voting Rights Act. And so this sort of, what is our democracy about if everyone can't participate, right? And why is it that they only support folks who have a certain point of view? And so I see all of these different perspectives as strategic, all these different things that are occurring, whether it's outright terrorism and violence and murder, or whether it's sort of de facto support of autocratic governments and leadership over our own stated ideas of democracy and self-governance. And secondly, and thirdly, voting rights suppression of people of color, black, indigenous people of color in this country, and also this anti-vaccine hysteria, which many right-wing Republican people have actually equated to really horrific things like the Holocaust, and it boggles the mind at how far they're willing to reach to try to push their It's funny because the white supremacy, they are in power, right? Not only here but across the world, but they also want to use sort of this language of victimhood in order to push their grievances. And so let's listen to as I mentioned earlier, Tucker Carlson and his take on Putin. All right, I think we have a caller.
I'm no foreign policy expert, but even I can see that virtually no one in the world thinks what Russia is doing right now is a good idea. Apparently, not even Putin's...
Okay, well, why don't we hold off on the thing? And I think we have some callers. Is Curtis still on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, yeah, Curtis. How are you?
Good. How's it going? Great. Great. You're doing a great job. I just wanted to say that this... what we should all be demonstrating for is healthcare, a more responsive and robust healthcare system. And these issues would become moot. It wouldn't matter if there was a big pandemic or mask wearing, taking the rights of individuals away. If we had a more responsive healthcare system that isolated this situation immediately before it became a nationwide situation. And so I think we should all be demonstrating for health care, and the issue would be moot. And just as an aside, I don't know if you can hear, I'm driving a truck right now. I've only driven for 8 years. And I can tell you, I'm more of a liberal truck driver. And I get into conversations with these guys, and they're all listening to guys like Lars Larson, who take stuff completely out of context. So thank you for putting this stuff into context.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Curtis. And so you are actually a trucker yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so how much support do you think this convoy actually has? I know it's in its early stages, and the reporting seems to say there aren't a lot of truckers taking part, but what kind of sense do you have?
Most of the truck drivers I know are Trump supporters, but none of them have talked about this convoy. None of them, we talk about them when we're on the dock waiting to be unloaded, and none of them have talked to me about this demonstration at all. And we all wear masks. A lot of them, there's people that have quit because they had to wear a mask and things like that. But but they're all, if I, and I get, just see what happens, see what you've done attitude, because I didn't vote for Trump. So they're all pushing for Trump supporters. But yeah,
wow.
No, I have not heard that much about these demonstrations, but maybe I'm out of the loop. Usually I would have heard about it while waiting on the dock.
And what do they think of the Canadian trucker convoy?
Yeah, I would say they're all in support of it because, like I say, I've had guys at the yard quit because in the beginning of the pandemic, they quit because they were forced to wear masks. So they went on unemployment. They said that they couldn't wear a mask and went on unemployment. So, most of them feel that it is a violation of their rights. And like I say, I would say, what it reminds me of is the scene in Soylent Green where everyone's wearing a mask in Soylent Green. They have turned us into a third world country. They do have a point that because we're in corporatocracy, the corporate oligarchs, although they don't see it this way, but because of corporations, we are a, they are taking away our rights in a way. And like I say, I don't think there should have been a different approach to this rather than going straight to the pharmaceutical companies. And they should have stopped this right away, and then they wouldn't be taking people's rights away. So I see some of the points.
So when you talk about better health care, I mean, it seems, of course, this was initially handled under the Trump administration, the response, And we don't really, because we don't have a federal health care system, you know, a lot of the response has to be done at the local level. And also we were, for a long time, the world was operating without a vaccine. So really, prevention was the only option. How do you feel like having better health care could have addressed this?
Well, like I say, I went and got vaccinated and wear a mask because we don't have health care. I think that they would have responded right away. They would have isolated, it started in a retirement home, and they would have isolated it right away. And yes, there might have been some border, we might have had to shut down the borders briefly, but it would have been a more limited, we had more responsive health care and, we probably would have had a closer to a vaccine and or some kind of, Cuba had a cure for this almost right away. They claimed to have had, I don't remember what, I can never remember the resveratrol or which one they had, but I'm just saying if we had more money in healthcare, we would have responded much quicker and stopped it in its tracks, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Curtis. And yeah, I thank you for calling in. I really appreciate that. I do agree that if we had national health care, we could respond much more effectively as a country and nation to these issues. I'm not sure how much faster it could have been done. It's sort of ironic that, of course, Trump would love to take credit for the vaccine being developed so quickly, but of course he can't because of all the anti-vaccine sentiment amongst his followers. In fact, he was booed at a rally where he said that he had gotten the vaccine, and so it's sort of unclear, how exactly. I mean, it's the lack of it was really the pandemic is being lengthened by the lack of vaccination, because that provides a sort of a group where sort of a human population where the virus can mutate and continue to develop and come back at us over and over again. And so we keep getting these different waves of variants of the virus. And so this is part of the problem. It's just ironic that they're protesting something that they sort of have created, in a sense. So it's a very strange circular situation. But thank you for calling in, Curtis. It looks like we lost one of our callers. Please do call in. This is a call-in show, and I would love to hear your perspective, and I really appreciated hearing from Curtis on the road. Once again, the number here is 503-231-8187, and my name is Jacqueline Keeler. I'm your host, and we are discussing three very seemingly different topics. So, one is the American Trucker Convoy going to D.C. in protest of COVID vaccine mandates. And the second is what we're going to play an audio about right now, which is Trump and his sort of supporters, support for Putin invading Ukraine. And I know those sound like two really different things, but we want to talk a bit about how these are sort of have the same source and the DNA of this country. All right, go ahead and play the Tucker Carlson audio.
Although Biden's critics on the right can't seem to make up their minds about whether we should be showing strength toward Putin or whether we should just be siding with Putin.
It might be worth asking yourself, since it is getting pretty serious, what is this really about? Why do I hate Putin so much? Has Putin ever called me a racist? Has he threatened to get me fired for disagreeing with him? Has he shipped every middle-class job in my town to Russia? Did he manufacture a worldwide pandemic that wrecked my business and kept me indoors for 2 years? Is he teaching my children to embrace racial discrimination? Is he making fentanyl? Is he trying to snuff out Christianity? Does he eat dogs?
So that was Tucker Carlson commenting on why should he hate Putin, right? And you can hear each of those things that he mentions are just completely, it's turning everything that's happening in this country on its head, referring to, his thing about teaching them to hate people. is him commenting on critical race theory and the Black Lives Matter movement, and turning, instead of turning something that is anti-racist, that is trying to deconstruct a system of racism in this country, instead he's representing it, repackaging it as actually, you know, allegedly racist itself. And so it's, you can see the way in which they're sort of inoculating themselves from actually having to deal with the situation at hand honestly, and then proceeding with a lie and choosing that instead, because it furthers their own interests of maintaining a system of inequality and maintaining power. And so in my book, I'm an author as well, and I published a book called Standoff, which covers two different standoffs that occurred in the United States in 2016, the Bundy takeover of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge here in Oregon and Standing Rock. And I really examine sort of what was the DNA of each of these different things, like where does it come from in American history? Why is it happening now? And so the show, we want to kind of look at that as well, and continue that process that has really been brought to the forefront of American thought and politics with the Capitol insurrection a year ago, and how that is still playing out and still escalating. Please do call in. Once again, this is a call-in show, and the number here in the studio is 503-231-8187. And so now I'm going to come to the third part, the third news item that we are featuring on the show, this episode, and it's quite, it's pretty tragic, actually, and it's just, my heart goes out to everyone, you know, in our community who stands up, who goes, you know, into the streets and stands up for, you know, the rights of myself, of my children. I mean, we're all brown. We don't pass for white. You know, we are at risk in society that uses violence against, you know, black and brown people in this country. And so I do really appreciate all Americans who do that. And recently we have lost some members of our community to violence as they were standing up against violence. And so, the shooting happened on Saturday night. A man named Benjamin Smith, he was actually initially described by police as a homeowner, which is not true. And the criticism of that is that they're setting up a scenario where a white homeowner man comes out armed and basically is being threatened by Black Lives Matter. So they're setting up this false narrative, which then basically excuses his violence, which is another form of how the system of white supremacy works in this country. And so he confronted a group of demonstrators who were protesting the killing of Amir Locke by Minneapolis police. So Locke, in case you weren't aware, was a 22-year-old black man. He was a young man. He was killed on February 2nd by police. And they were conducting a no-knock warrant on a residence. And once again, this protest occurred. It's as if nothing has been learned from the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And once again, because this is a systemic issue, it's the actual systems in place that make this happen over and over again. This idea that there's some learning process involved, I think, is inadequate to address the situation. This is why people are calling for defunding the police. That may seem like a strange term to use, and I'm sure Tucker Carlson has something to say about it. But the issue is the systems. Can we continue to try to, tweak them to make them better? Or are they themselves the problem? Trying to reform the police has been going on for decades now, and nothing, and yet here we are again, right? 30 years after the killing the beating of Rodney King, all of these, since we've had video, and really since the use of you know, phone cameras and video. You know, we've been able to record more and more of these instances to make it clear that this is happening, you know, and the sort of the blue lie, the constant lying on police reports, misrepresenting things, that these things are real, these things really occur, and basically support the continued violence against Black and brown communities and on Black and brown bodies, and also now, and has happened before, on white Americans who stand up against, who actively take an anti-racist stance. Their lives are also at risk. So it shows you the system itself is set up to prime people to do these things which are racist and are violent and not even sensible. So yeah, if you'd like to be part of this conversation, please do call in. Don't be afraid. My name is Jacqueline Keeler. This is American Standoff, and you can call us in the studio at 503-231-8187. And so right now, Smith, Benjamin Smith, the terrorist, the shooter, he is basically facing second degree murder and four counts of second degree attempted murder. And this is from a news release from the Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt. He has also been charged with two counts of first degree assault with a firearm and two counts of second degree assault with a firearm. And so there was an affidavit released, a probable cause affidavit, and as to what actually happened. This happened at Normandale Park on Saturday night here in Portland. And the affidavit says Smith approached the march, which was held in protest to the police killing of Amir Locke, and began yelling at the group. The demonstrators told him to leave, and he responded, according to the affidavit, by demanding they make him leave, right? And he aggressively approached a protester who pushed him back. Moments later, he opened fire, shooting five people, authorities said. So the shooting only stopped when someone else shot Smith in the hip. And the murder victim was a woman named June Knightley, and she was 60 years old, and she was very much loved by her community and the work that she did, you know, against this exact same kind of violence, you know, and here she is a victim of violence and by someone who is, who is listening to these far right radio shows and getting radicalized online and by the system. So we actually have a caller, Gordon.
Yes.
Hi, Gordon. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay. Yeah, so I've been a supporter of KBOO for years, up until sometime in the pandemic. And the vaccine is the smallpox blanket. Okay, it's not proven to be effective or safe. And it's against the Nuremberg protocols to mandate these things. So what do you say to that?
Yeah, I haven't seen any studies supporting what you're saying, and also how we have a number of vaccines that we're required to have for certain things.
Right. They're totally different. They're not mRNA. They're not experimental. Whether they are safe or not, it's been proven. If you look at the vaccine adverse effects report, VAERS, you can get it online. It's from, I think, the CDC. There have been more adverse reactions to this bunch of vaccine, so-called vaccines, since they've come out, than all other vaccines since they started keeping track back in the 80s. So you're telling me that it's safe and effective? It's apparently not. I personally know four people that have died after getting it from strokes, heart attacks, and they're saying, oh, it's not related. Well, duh.
Four people who have died?
Died. Mm-hmm. Yeah, died. And right now my wife is struggling with blood clots, which she didn't have before she got boosted. And at first the doctors were saying, oh, no, it can't be the vaccine. Oh, and that's not a blood clot, but it fit all the criteria for being a blood clot in her leg. Never had them before. So
I'd like to actually, I'm looking right now here at the CDC's report on selected adverse events reported after COVID-19 vaccination.
Oh, good.
And this was published in February 15th, 2022, so just about 9 days ago. And what it says is COVID-19 vaccines are safe and effective.
Who is running the FDA? They go from the FDA right to Moderna, right to Pfizer. Okay, it's a revolving door.
I don't want to use my show to platform vaccine denial. Okay,
and but you're pushing it. You're saying, yeah, we all need to get this stuff, and that it's safe and effective when it's not.
I know you're saying that it's not, but it doesn't make it so.
Just because it says it on the FDA that it's safe and effective doesn't make it so. What about the swine flu vaccine? They pulled that after 50 adverse reactions.
According to the, I'm going to have to let you go, but I would like to say that.
Of course. You know what? And I got to hand it to you.
This is the most intense. It's the most intense safety monitoring program in U.S. history. And I know as a Navajo citizen, 90% of Navajo people are vaccinated, and we take it very seriously because we have elders who are our language speakers, as do many Native nations across the United States and Canada. We want to preserve our language speakers. So, the Navajo Nation and many Native nations took this far more seriously than their white rural neighbors. And when I did a podcast for Pollination Magazine throughout the first year of the pandemic, and I did a live interview with tribal leaders from South Dakota who were facing off against Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota, who was a huge Trump supporter, and actually hosted him in the midst of the pandemic at our sacred Black Hills to hold this big 4th of July. Celebration at Mount Rushmore, which is a desecration of our sacred mountain. And she was trying to force the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe, which is just adjacent and south of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. She was trying to force them to open their borders to allow truckers to go through who were at the time there was no vaccine, and that they were telling, routing them around the reservation to protect their community. We have one of the most vulnerable communities in the country, health-wise and culturally speaking, because we're trying to preserve our culture. And so I think that, there's been no reporting of any of these sorts of huge problems with the vaccine. And we have saved lives of our elders to be able to continue to teach us the things that they know. And so I have to respectfully really take issue with what you're saying. And we had many Navajo physicians and, leaders of the Navajo Nation who were leading the vaccination process on our podcast, Pollination Magazine. And there just has not been that kind of impact on health-wise on the community. So thank you, Gordon. But I'd like to continue with the show. We have discussed, we're discussing three different issues today on American Standoff, and then I would encourage people to call in. I'm sorry, I won't platform vaccine denial. I refuse to do that because it's, at this point, I think it's pretty irresponsible. And so I'd love to hear people's point of view, but it does have to be based in extremism. I think that, some people may feel the way I talk about white supremacy is quote-unquote extremist, but I do see that the reason why most of the people who are not getting their shots are white people is directly tied to these sort of ways in which they find narratives not based in facts, but narratives that are basically levers to power, right? And so they are going to challenge these things in order to create, to destabilize our political situation nationally in order to continue to maintain power. And of course, in other ways as well, which I covered in last week's show, which is, of course, gerrymandering and suppressing the vote of people that they disagree with, who are primarily Black, Indigenous people of color. And so this is deeply tied to the experience of whiteness. And I often describe white privilege, right? The experience of being white in this country. It's like, you know, it's like being in a bubble, you know. And but it's also what I describe white privilege as: the house that white supremacy built, right? It's you live in that house, you don't even know it's the house. You think it's the entire world, right? You walk through the house and you walk down its corridors and you think that this is all there is. It's directing your motions, what you see, what you know. You look out the window and all you can see is what's framed by the window, right? The landscape. And so there, it's really hard to understand and challenge how it's working upon you when you live inside it, right? And so it really is, this is the reason why it's people on the outside of that house, people who do not benefit from white privilege and white supremacy, who can see the house. They can, because we're outside, we're waving to all of you inside saying, hey, this, we can see the structure of it, we can see what it's about, we're trying to explain it to you. And so once again, getting back to, you know, the three main topics, which is the trucker convoy, the protesting COVID vaccine restrictions, you know, the Trump support of Putin in Ukraine and the following of his followers, trying to elaborate on that support in some way. And with Tucker Carlson questioning, Tucker Carlson's questioning of Putin, of why should I hate Putin, is a direct play on Muhammad Ali's statement during the Vietnam War, when he was questioned why he would not go and fight in Vietnam, why he was willing to go to prison to resist, fighting overseas and against, quote unquote, communism in Vietnam. He said, "No Vietnamese ever called me the N-word." You know, and so this is why he refused to do it. And so when Tucker Carlson is saying Putin never called me a racist, he is directly turning that cynically and snidely on its head and trying to apply that to a situation to further the goal of white supremacy in this country, to maintain that system. And they will do it any way they can, find any way that they can to push that agenda. And this is another stratagem to do that. And then the third thing we are looking at today on this show on American Standoff is the issue of the really tragic murder and violent shooting of unarmed protest unarmed march organizers, because they were there to organize the route of the march. And so right now I would like to actually before the end of my show play an audio of her friends and loved ones remembering her of June Knightley. Thank you.
We start tonight with friends mourning the loss of a Portland woman shot and killed Saturday night. It happened during a rally for racial justice in Northeast Portland. Catherine Cook spoke with those who knew June Knightley, a person they say lived to stand up for others.
Just the shock of knowing that she was shot and killed was unbelievable to me.
It's the collective response from those who knew and loved 60-year-old June Knightley. Multiple sources tell KGW the Portland woman was shot and killed during a rally for racial justice Saturday night at Normandale Park. Police have not confirmed her identity.
Take some time to mourn the loss of June. Keep her in your heart and in your light, and keep fighting the good fight.
Close friend Nacy Runyon says it's what Knightley would want people to do. The two reconnected in 2020 after the murder of George Floyd. They attended several marches and demonstrations together. Runyon says Knightley, whose nickname was T-Rex, would often provide security during protests or direct traffic to protect demonstrators.
She just had that demeanor about her to keep everyone calm and keep everyone safe. And she was just this bright light of a motherly figure as well. And that's why everybody had just warmed up to her almost immediately because of what she did for everybody else.
Knightley leaves behind a wife, an adult son, and a community that friends say treasured her. That includes Belinda Carroll.
She described herself as a pacifist more than once. So, you know, so that was kind of where she lived, was de-escalation and making sure that people were talking to each other in a calm way.
Details from Saturday's shooting are still emerging. Police say five other people were hurt. They say the scene was so chaotic, they're still gathering evidence to prove, quote, who was a suspect and who was a victim, adding many at the rally refused to talk to them. A woman who was among those injured told the New York Times a man who lived near the park fired at a group that was rerouting traffic ahead of a planned march.
The only thing I knew for sure is that there were two separate guns that got shot.
Jeff Pry lives across the street and heard the shooting.
It's a tragedy all the way around, but like knowing my son was in the living room and then a bullet could have went through our front window at any time. For what? I'm not really sure.
As the investigation continues, friends and loved ones focus on the person they lost. A small group gathered Monday night at Director Park downtown and marched in honor of June Knightley.
It's a real slap in the face that this happened. And, you know, I think everybody's going to be sad for a long time.
The Oregonian says the man who lives next to the park was injured when an armed demonstrator returned fire. A family member also told the Oregonian the suspect had grown increasingly upset with the protests across the city and in his neighborhood.
Okay. That was some local reporting done about the murder of June Knightley. And we have a caller right now, Barth. Or actually, I'm sorry, Evan. Evan was first.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I had two comments I kind of wanted to share briefly. One was in regards to what the previous caller, I think it said something regarding the vaccine being a smallpox blanket. That was the analogy. I hadn't heard that per se, and I thought that that was not accurate. Smallpox already existed. You know, it already was a disease, much like COVID already is a disease. And so the blanket was the means by which an existing disease was, you know, disseminated amongst people who were vulnerable to it. And so I think the accurate analogy for a smallpox blanket is, you know, not wearing a mask in a public place or choosing to do things that will likely harm other people, as opposed to the vaccine. I think that's a really poor analogy. So I just wanted to pick at it.
No, I totally agree. And I actually found it really offensive because, and biological warfare was a major part of diminishing the Native population, you know, I think by 90% in some communities, and made us much more vulnerable to other attacks and losing our land. But it often did precede European actual contact as well. But I found it really offensive because Native nations here in the U.S., have fought the hardest, have maintained COVID vaccine restrictions to a much higher degree than most of the country, I would say, Timmy. And we're actually threatened and are continued to be harassed by white leaders, particularly white rural Republican leaders, about this issue. And like they're trying to infect us with it. I mean, like they're trying to make us accept, you know, unvaccinated people coming into our communities. I mean, and even, you know, of course, as I mentioned, Governor Kirsten Noem of South Dakota holding that huge celebration in the middle of the pandemic at our sacred mountain, which has been defaced and desecrated by Mount Rushmore, right? Putting these, racist presidents on white men on the face of our sacred mountain. And it's quite, it just doesn't fit with what I understand the situation and have reported extensively in the past 2 years. But thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
Sure. Well, I had a quick thought on the trucker convoy too.
Oh, sure.
Just regards to other kind of things, it seems like over the last 2 years, as people on the left have been able to express themselves more, get out in larger groups and organize a little better and feel more open and comfortable. I think people on the right envy that. They also want, they have things they want to say or they're upset about, but they're trivial compared to things like racial discrimination, you know, oppressive violence, white supremacy. You know, it's like, I'm uncomfortable in the social setting because I look awkward with a mask. You know, it's insignificant, but they see the action. They're envious of the organization, and so they try and do these other things to, you know, I don't know. And it, who's it serving? And it doesn't seem to be serving what's bothering them. So, that was my last one.
Oh, thank you, thank you. It is interesting that during the pandemic, and so I mean, people basically risked their lives to go out and protest against this sort of violence. I mean, it's really extraordinary, and you know, it's the largest rally that many of these cities have ever seen. You know, and it really says to you how much it means to so many Americans. You know, it really does. And whether they're jealous, or whether the right wing are jealous, I don't know. But, you know, definitely Ammon Bundy was still in Idaho actively protesting, trying to, you know, enter meetings without a mask. And he recently stopped his run for governor of Idaho. But he was organizing a militia, an armed militia, to go and sort of defend people's white families, or, you know, people's rights. I don't know if they have to be white, but their right to basically not wear a mask and come and support them if any sort of, so yeah, that was happening. They were doing those, having those meetings and things like that. And of course, you know, yeah, a lot of, but anyway, let me get my next caller in. It is Barth.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm sorry I didn't get to listen to all of your show today. I've been running around, but you talked about the local shooter opening fire on Black Lives protesters. And I think that's a hugely regrettable and dangerous situation. But I think it's perhaps a little bit of overreach linguistically to call him a terrorist. This guy was apparently very disturbed. He had drunk the Kool-Aid about, you know, all the othering of people that are different from you, labeling protesters communists and agitators, and he wound himself up till he broke, you know. I mean, a lot of other people paid the price, but I don't think that his aim per se was a terrorist act. He thought that he was defending, you know, his own
idea. I would say that the criticism of that is that white men are often given sort of this latitude to be troubled, right? But, you know, when it happens to people of color, they're immediately, because they are so othered by society, you know, I think that the label of terrorist is accurate, because the violence that white supremacy breeds in people who identify as white, or who are identified by society as white, is very well documented, and very much a part of American, not only American history, but the American present. And this is what the issue that Black Lives Matter protesters and leaders have brought up, is that there's inherent violence in so many of these systems that we think we take for granted as normal. And then they're assuming the police force being, you know, I think Michelle Alexander, in her book about Jim Crow, you know, really does a great job of detailing how the modern American police force evolved from slave catching forces, you know, that could cross state boundaries and go and you know, bring people back into bondage.
I believe that, but
the terrorism aspect, you know, this is terror. This is how white supremacy has helped maintain control, is through acts of terror. Things that strike from lynchings to all of these things, these acts of terror, you know, holding people, other people, in states of terror. And so what he's doing cannot be actually decontextualized from that history or how that system works, right? It can't be.
Fair enough. You have changed my opinion. Thank you for your work. Thanks for your show.
I really do appreciate it.
it's a good thing for the station, and it's a good thing for the country to get a wider set of viewpoints. So thanks for yours, and thanks for bringing some more people in. Good luck with it. Good day.
Thank you so much. And so I would actually like to close the show with a statement from Commissioner Hardesty, and which she issued Tuesday via email about the tragic and violent murder of Black Lives Matter activist June Knightley. Last weekend, I shared my heartbreak at the mass shooting in Portland by a man that killed one, injured four, and was awaiting more information. Now we know the victim is June Knightley, a 60-year-old woman, and the alleged shooter is a man with white supremacist sympathies. There is a history and pattern of threats of violence against activists, including myself. As a community, this is deeply wounding and distressing. June was part of a group of unarmed women peacekeepers who supported racial justice demonstrations and engaged in compassionate work with the homeless. Even more for me is that June was an early volunteer with our campaign who collected signatures so we could qualify for re-election. I'm extending my personal condolences to Knightley's wife, Catherine Knapp. As a campaign, we are taking a pause and reviewing our safety protocols. We know this has been this has a chilling effect on civic engagement, and we will keep fighting for a world where we will experience safety on our streets and in our daily lives. So I'd like to thank you all, everyone who called in. This is Jacqueline Keeler, and this is the latest episode of American Standoff.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m.
It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness.